saves me a lot of trouble when doing code. I can use it in an update statement explicitly. Nobody seems to know this. I can also use it explicitly in an insert into. There's an insert into all defaults. Instead of actually listing either a values expression or a select statement, I can just say insert defaults and get it filled up. Other bad thing people do, and particularly for money, I don't know why exactly, they'll put the default value in the wrong data type. You'll see such and such, decimal 12, comma 4, not null, default, which is supposed to come before not null, by the way, in the standard. But most products are pretty liberal about how you do it. Default 0. I'm sorry, 0 is an integer. But I now have to convert to decimal every time I put in the default. It really should have said default 0.000 and could get it before 4.0 so that it would be in the right data type. Another one, I've got a fixed length character column. So I put in NA or missing or whatever as my default string. Now it has to be padded out with blanks. Go ahead and put the default all the way out to the right size in its own clause. Check-in strings, these are my favorite. By the way, it's not a predicate. We'll say predicate, but officially it's called a search condition in SQL. And it's got to test either true or unknown. Why? Because I have a check-in string on a nullable column. So I can get when I apply the predicate, I can get an unknown back instead of just true or false. In full SQL 92, and I think only RDB has this completely implemented, and now it's buried inside Oracle. But I can reference anything I want to in a check-in string. So I could go out to other tables. Essentially, I could write a lot of the DRI and whatnot as check-in strings. There are several ways I can do this. But in practice, most products allow a check-in string only on the table in which it's declared. It doesn't go outside. If I had my create assertion, that would sit out as a check-in string on the entire schema. And it'd be a great place to put business rules, wouldn't it? The fear with create assertion is that any time you touch the database, you got to go to your assertions and go through them. And gee, wouldn't that be a lot of overhead, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm not sure. I think probably you wouldn't do a lot of create assertions. And a good optimizer and so on. I don't think it's as bad as people seem to think it is. But check constraints can get messy. They don't have to be simple predicates. A good use of the case expression. Put a case expression inside a check constraint. And as you go through the test, then one, finding else zero equals one. You're essentially writing a bunch of nested if-thens in disguise. And you get pretty fancy with the predicates. You can also, since a case expression goes through in the order it's written when it's doing its testing, you can do a little rearranging to get the most likely things evaluated first. You can also put in a test that returns a zero if you juggle. You can really play around with the check constraints. You get an awful lot of power out of them. Another one that drives me nuts, I do a data audit. I look at the names and addresses. I see that for some reason I've got a lot of names that begin with a blank. Somebody's making a consistent typing error or something. So I've got leading blanks. Well, okay, the first thing I do, of course, is do an update to trim off the extra blanks. Maybe if I'm really good, I trim off the trailing blanks and I squeeze up spacing. So that everything's really neat. I've done my update. I've cleaned up my data. And then I go home. Because, hey, I'm a front-end application, user, developer, whatever. I don't get to touch the DBA stuff. I don't tell the DBA about this. Because, gee, if I told him about it, maybe he would put a check constraint that would not allow it in the first place. A basic rule of software engineering. First you mop up the water, then you fix the leak. We don't go back and fix the leak in databases. Because there's a disconnect between the users that find the errors, the data errors, and the DBA. You could actually put a check and string on it and do something about it. This is one of my big gripes. Because every month, they're running the same update statement to scrub the data. At least make a new mistake each month. Right? I mean, here's some examples of the check and string. In predicate for a short list of things. Now we can also do this with a foreign key reference. Rule of thumb. If the list of allowed values is short and very constant, by the way, that list, you probably don't recognize it, that's the ISSX codes. 0, 1, 2, 9. And now you're thinking, oops, they changed something and haven't told me. You were thinking M and F, well, unless you're a non-English speaker. I think everybody should go to a foreign country that has a totally different set of words for male and female, or better yet, a completely different set of characters for their language, and you can just stand in front of the restrooms. Come on, somebody come out. Come on. Toss the coin, run. But no, the codes are 0 for unknown, 1 for male, 2 for female, 9 for lawful person. Corporate entities, organizations that have the status of a person legally. I can check the birth date is less than the current timestamp, the current system clock. That one doesn't always port. Sometimes we'll take it, and we'll, every time that row is touched, we'll apply the check constraint. That one gets messy. But in some cases, it's allowed. I can do a simple comparison to make sure that we hired an employee whose IQ is greater than 0. Well, it's, I think these days that's getting harder. I have a big gripe about people that only have a Microsoft certification and get a responsible job and then kill people. Or in the, or even worse yet, mess up my payroll check. I can check two columns against each other, the hire date and the birth date. Make sure we don't hire anybody before, until after he's been born. I can do like predicates. That's one that's also underused. If I design my own encoding schemes, I want check digits and something to syntax on it. I don't want to be able to take just any string that's the right length and put it in the database. So I've got, for numerical stuff, I've got check digits. How many people ever had a decent lecture in college on the design of check digits? I didn't. That's one that you're sort of expected to pick up yourself. But if you've got anything that's exposed to a human being, where they've got to type it in or talk to you about it, it's really nice to have a check digit to at least let the front end know, yes, it's a valid code, and then I'll see if it's in the database and other things. Likewise, I can do things with syntax. Like if my part number always begins with the letters X, Y, Z, or W, followed by... These days, you've got access to regular expression stuff in most languages, as function calls. In standard SQL, it's called similar to. So in one case, it's the like predicate, the simple like predicate will do quite well. Between predicate, again, nice little shorthand if I didn't want to list out all of the values. Now, again, these things are important also for the queries because they're put in to the optimizer. Stored procedures, triggers, don't tell the optimizer anything. The other rule, going back to the in predicate, if I've got a long list that changes a lot, whatever that means, then I'll do it as a foreign key reference to another table and maintain the other table, which can, you know, can mess me up too.
The foreign key reference then guarantees that I cannot mess up the allowed keys against existing ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is missing in the check constraint. The check only...
At the time of entry.
At the most system,
yeah. Yeah, that's why I say use the check with the end predicate if it's a small set of values that's not going to change much. They probably won't invent another sex. But So with genetic engineering, we're probably working on it somewhere, just not inside the United States with Bush in office.
Can you give a concrete example of an optimizer who is smart enough to use this, so I, just so I can have this argument?
Ingress. In fact, Ingress does a lot of its stuff with predicates. Their whole security system is a matter of tacking on predicates to the end of the where clause. Where user is allowed to do this, where user is allowed to do this. Okay, you mentioned the optimizer in Postgres. DB2 also does it. I'm suing Postgres. I don't know, but one of the reasons I'm here is
I don't think so.
Just on the insert. I think maybe Ingress is still ahead of everybody.
It might be that the Postgres optimizer is good enough anyway.
No, these things are really handy, especially if you do a statistical model in your optimizer. DB2 for the value stores the average, the min, the max, the second greatest, and the second smallest value. So it can figure out a bell curve for a sort of fuzzy logic thing.
But the Postgres optimizer uses a cost-based model based on statistical information about the table. So it analyzes what it has on min, max, and samples in between.
I mean, yeah.
To get the key dispersion.
Yeah.
And the distribution.
Exactly.
And that's basically what you have here. If you would take this information into account in the optimizer, these are just hints about the key dispersion and distribution.
Yeah. That's for sex, I got up to four.
You have that information anyway. You don't need to look at the check constraints.
Yeah, but if you do look at the check constraints, that can go in and figure into the hints and the other things too.
Right.
If your statistics are out of date, for example. That's it. Essentially, if you've got a constraint database, Prolog, some of the stuff that came out of Prolog, for doing predicates, figured into these.
The constraint still doesn't tell me anything about the real population of the database.
No.
On the table.
Well, no, it tells me, for example, I've got four values or three values.
No.
So, if I've got an int predicate.
I could have four values.
Yeah. And now
it doesn't tell me that they are not the same.
But I know not to look for the full range of integers. I now know that I'm dealing with a very discrete set. And then I can worry about how skewed it is later. But I know that a population is very easily skewed, as opposed to having a wide range of integers. Just like with it, if I see primary key constraint, I know that every value is unique.
Right.
So now I know something about the distribution when I start doing my fuzzy logic. I got some information.
But it is possible that if you are actually looking at the data that's in the table and using that as your intent, you make it a better optimization than the constraint. In fact, if you are using one of the values